Hello, it's Robert Bathurst here. I was one of the first guests on My Time Capsule, and Mike has asked me to tell you that you can now listen to the podcast ad-free by subscribing to Acast Plus. Details of how to join are in the description of each episode. Mike says it's very reasonably priced. In fact, Mike says it's a bargain. And who am I to disagree, locked here in his cellar? Anyway, for a small subscription, Acast Plus, My Time Capsule, ad-free. Free. Unlike me.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello again, I hope, and welcome to My Time Capsule. My name's Mike Fenton Stevens, and My Time Capsule is a podcast where people tell me five things from their life that they wish they had in a time capsule. They can pick anything they like from any time in their life, but they must pick four things that they cherish and one thing that they wish they could forget. My guest in this episode is Ainsley Harriott. After almost three decades as one of the country's favourite TV chefs, Ainsley has become something of a national institution, demonstrated by the fact that in 2020, he was deservedly awarded an MBE for his services to broadcasting and the culinary arts. Ainsley trained at Westminster College before a career in London's top hotels and restaurants, and with his years of experience working in professional kitchens, he's developed a deep understanding of his craft. In the early 1990s, Ainsley was invited to become a resident chef on BBC TV's Good Morning with Anne and Nick. This in turn led to 21 series of Ready, Steady, Cook. And his TV career obviously took off. Other series include Ainsley's Barbecue Bible, Ainsley's Meals in Minutes, Ainsley Harriott's Street Food, Len and Ainsley's Big Food Adventure, Ainsley's Caribbean Kitchen, and Ainsley's Mediterranean Cookbook, among many, many others. Ainsley's new series, Ainsley's National Trust Cook-Off, is on ITV and ITVX from Saturday the 18th of May. 10 episodes filmed at three National Trust locations, showcasing their kitchen gardens in a totally new way, with Ainsley and other internationally renowned chefs using freshly picked seasonal vegetables, fruit, herbs and spices to cook outdoors. And as is always the way on TV, it didn't rain once. Of course, Ainsley is also a best-selling author, having sold over 2 million books worldwide. And over the past 15 years, the Ainsley Harriott food range has gone from strength to strength. So what a bloomin' marvellous career Ainsley's had. But what of his life? And the five things from it he'd want in a time capsule. Well, here to tell us his choices is the man himself, the lovely Ainsley Harriott.
Can you see me?
I can, Ainsley. How are you, mate?
I've been messing about for ages, thinking, oh, which button is it? And it wasn't that long ago that we were actually doing all Zoom meetings, weren't we?
Yeah, everything. Thank goodness.
I've got to say, you're looking very well.
You're looking great.
You're looking
mate.
Well, Michael.
It's lovely to see you. It really is. How are you?
I'm a little bit that spring sort of hay fever.
Ah,
it's kind of in the air, but I'm a sucker for getting out into the garden, Michael. I don't know about you, but I love it. You know, a little bit of sunshine comes out.
Well, look what you've just been doing. look what you've been doing. I mean, you spent the whole time filming this fantastic new series. I'm so jealous. I can't tell you.
Oh, wow.
What a lovely idea of spending all that time in those gorgeous gardens, walled gardens of the National Trust places. I'm going to tell everybody what I'm talking about, which is you've got this new series, Ainsley's National Trust Cook-Off. It's on ITV from the 18th of May for 10 episodes. Starts 11:40 on Saturday mornings. Can't wait.
Oh, it was such fun. And you know what the real beauty of it is? Because I'm a bit of a people person, as you know. I like talking to people. I like seeing people kind of express themselves. And there's a love. If you love a garden, then that's the best place. You know, it's almost like talking to people in the kitchen because it just brings themselves out. It's a relaxed environment. And down there, I think I met, you know, several people that were in top, top jobs. I think one of them was doing something for the Bank of England, and he was a chairman, or he certainly had a senior position. And I said, do you enjoy it? He says, oh, he said, no responsibility. Look at this. He dug up a bit of soil, put a plant in the soil. He said, that's it. That's all I have to do. And he was so thrilled, the idea that, you know, it's no pressure. It gives a wonderful sense of satisfaction that you put something in there and you come back months later and it's grown into chives or onions or whatever it is. You know, it's something really, really lovely. And I loved it. And I love that little quote. It's not just a garden. It's a sanctuary where nature meets community.
That's beautiful.
Isn't that lovely? It's lovely?
Well, I know from personal experience, Ainsley, and you will almost certainly have forgotten this, but I'm going to tell this because I think it's something that I'd love to
don't,
be public.
Don't you dare, Michael. No.
It's really...
No.
A long time ago, Ainsley, we were at a party at the lovely Adam White's gorgeous flat. Do you remember it? In Barnes, overlooking the bridge.
Yes, overlooking the Hammersmith Bridge.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
And I was there with my son, who is also, strangely enough, the producer of this podcast after all these times. He's now in his 40s. At the time, he was 12 years old, and he was having a really tough time. He dropped out of school, and he was very miserable. And I took him, because I knew how Adam cheers everybody up.
Yeah.
And I introduced you to him. And you said, hello, John, how are you? What do you like to do? And you said, well, I like to cook. And you went, how interesting. And I wandered off. And about 45 minutes later, I came back and he was sitting on the kitchen counter and you were still talking to him about it. And I think that says an enormous amount about you. And from him and me, we both wanted to say thank you for that because it made a big difference in our lives.
That's love. I don't know. Oh, what a way to start. This is it. Lovely.
It's lovely, isn't it?
Yeah, I can imagine that happening.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you meet people and you get something back from them. And sometimes we just need to give each other time.
Yeah.
You know, all in such a rush and, you know, you coming back all these years later and just saying that it's just made him feel comfortable.
Mm.
Mind you, I think everybody would feel comfortable at Adams, and there's a lovely train set that went round. Remember the train set that went all around his apartment?
I know, all around the Christmas tree. He'd made a hole in the wall so he could do it. Extraordinary.
Yes, absolutely. Oh, wonderful.
Lovely man.
Oh, give them my love. That's lovely.
I will do.
Maybe a little bit. Oh, still beautiful, beautiful, beautiful.
Well, yeah, you know, people never forget those things, Ainsley. I've never forgotten. Every time I see you, I remember that wonderful thing you did for my son. Beautiful.
Oh, wonderful. Oh, I know. And look at us. We're almost dressed the same, aren't we, Michael?
We are a little bit. So we're going to play this game. I hope you've been warned.
Oh, yes.
What do you think?
I think it's lovely. I think it's one of those questions. It reminds me a little bit of when people turn around and say, what's your favourite five films, you know? Or sometimes they say to me, what's your favourite thing to eat? What do you like?
Mm-hmm.
And I think quite often it's an emotional thing. It's a seasonal thing. It's something that what we feel today or what we might answer today, we don't necessarily answer tomorrow. You know, certainly when it comes to food, what I eat in the middle of winter, and I love that kind of homely kind of invitation of wonderful stews and great soups and stuff like that. But I wouldn't necessarily want to have that in the middle of the summer. Do you know what I mean? I want it light and fresh and exciting and full of sunlight, really. That's what food reflects for me in that time of the year. But I prepared to give it a bit of a challenge, and I was thinking about it.
Good.
Because
when we think about it, Michael, you know, the most important things to us is the family and the pet dog and stuff mm-hmm. like that. But mm-hmm. that's all too easy. And I think it has to be something that you've grown up with, something that has got sentimental value. So I think I'm going to start things off with my mum's Dutchy pot.
Ah, pass the Dutchy on the left-hand side.
Yes, boy, pass the Dutchy on the left-hand side. Yes, daddy-daddy-da-da-da-dee-da-da. Anyway, my mum's Dutchy pot, which I think I've got here. Well, my mother's, late mother's Dutchy pot was something that she brought over with her from the Caribbean many, many moons ago. I think she arrived here. She wasn't part of the Windrush generation, but she certainly came over here to study nursing. Mm. And there was a few classic things that I remember. And one obviously was the Dutchy pot. Another one was my grandfather put the strap. Remember when people used to put straps around suitcases
yeah.
to make sure nothing came out or you'd mm-hmm. be able to identify it? There was a belt. A strap or a belt,
yeah,
and that belt, and it wasn't just for the suitcase. Every time we were naughty kids in those days, you dumb kids, how many times I have to tell you? If you did that now, the social services would be around.
Well, quite, I know.
But we grew up okay, and you know, we all went on to do great things. You know, my brother was a businessman, my sister was a fabulous teacher. Mm. She'd only just, a few years ago, she retired from it, but she doesn't miss it. She said, oh, this Ofsted business, you know, they stop you from teaching, they're coming in and checking on this and checking on
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
It's all about your love. And if I was being honest, I think my mum brought us up like that. We all had that bit where we just wanted to give something and allow people the opportunity, do you know what I mean, to give that love, to give that or share those skills.
Well, clearly that if she came to study nursing, was she a nurse most of her working life?
Well, no, she came to study nursing, then she met my dad, Chester Harriot, who was the famous pianist. So she should have probably, I think she'd have probably continued with it. Mm. She certainly nursed us. Anything that happened, you know, whether it would be a graze on the common or something even more dramatic. I certainly remember her being brilliant with me because I grew up and I was in an oxygen tent when I was two.
Really?
I had terrible sort of, I was very asthmatic and stuff like that. Mum was just brilliant and plenty Tiger Balm or Vicks or something rubbed on the chest or something like that, you know. Those old-fashioned things they used to do in those days, Michael.
Yes. And, yeah, you could do with her now with the hay fever.
Oh, I know. And she was just the brilliant, the different types of foods and stuff that she'd make. And I think the real beauty, of course, of the immigrants around about that time is that they wanted to integrate into society or integrate into life in England. So they all went off to the church or something like that, a place where they could all congregate, they could all meet. And what was really beautiful was that you're meeting all these different cultures, people from all over the world. Mm. And that's where all these lovely foods came from, you know. And my mum was inviting them over for a bit of a West Indian speciality. And they'd reciprocate, whether it would be Chinese, whether it would be Indian, whether it would be Greek or Italian. The San Filippos lived up the road. Mm. And she was a big lady, Mrs. San Filippo. But wow, could she cook some of that food, you know. Vincent and Dino, they were brilliant. We used to hang out with them. Oh, there was the Greek families, the Scudamores, which I still know to this day.
Right.
I was known as the eighth child. Mm. They had seven children. And I was known as the eighth child. And Papa Scudamore always used to joke when I was sitting around the table with them, this big table and all the lovely food and everything. He said, I had this one at night. But that wouldn't have, he said, that wouldn't have gone down well today. I think he might have been taken off to the races or some plank he'd had to walk up.
Yes, but clearly not.
No. It was just the way that they did it. And I say, oh, Papa, but such a lovely family, wonderful. And of course, they'd come around to our house to eat. And it was just the way it was, you know, beautiful.
How lovely to fall in love with food through the experience of sharing it with others.
Oh, yeah. And a lot of that beautiful rice and peas that my mother cooked, going back to her Dutchy pot again, was all in the Dutchy pot. And I still, you know, if I was going away somewhere, I'd like to take that pot with me because it signifies love. It signifies nourishment. It signifies you know, there's a wonderful history attached to it. Mm. And I think as we all get a little bit older...
Speak for yourself.
Yes, well, you know. Where's that Volta roll? As we all get a little bit older, I think those things become even more important, you know?
They do. Well, it's amazing that that's the thing that... Because she couldn't have brought many things with her. It's not like you're having stuff brought over in a removals van. What you could carry is what you brought over to a large extent.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And she chose that.
Oh, well, she chose that. And there's lots of other little things that, you know, bless her. It must have given her immense comfort then, going to a new world, a new challenge. And she was the first of many children.
It's an astonishingly bold thing to do, isn't it?
Yeah.
At the moment, we're going through the whole process of people talking about that sort of immigration now as if it's an invasion. And you think of the wealth and the richness that has come from our culture of people coming to this country to live, absolutely, and become part of the community and change the community, bring something to it.
Oh, and people have adapted too. You know, it's kind of, you want to protect it. People could talk about immigration and people coming in, taking this and taking that. And you're so right, Michael. You add something, you bring something fresh and exciting to it. I can also understand people protecting it. You know, we all get very protective about our parking space now. You know, people parking, oh, you can't park there, you can't do this, you can't do that, you know. And so we've always been a bit like that. But over a period of time, you know, everyone softens, everyone kind of sees that there is something special about it. There is something wonderful about sharing with people. And, you know, now that's kind of gone on to life and we're having this wonderful, if you like, coffee-coloured nation that is just, you know, and I've just become a grandfather and I'm so excited. You know, brilliant. I've got this wonderful five-month-old granddaughter who is just gorgeous. And I'm so glad to say that, you know, she's a happy, healthy baby. And, you know, because there's a lot of stuff. I've got other friends who have not had such a fantastic experience. But when you do and you kind of think, yeah, this is what it's all about.
Absolutely. And as you say, as a little two-year-old you in an oxygen tent, you think to yourself, well, thank heavens, really.
I know. It was just, I don't know why Jacqueline, my older sister and brother, both, you know, I'm the youngest of three, so constantly get told what to do. Now, what you should do, Ainsley. And it hasn't changed, you know. I've been cooking on television for the best part of 30 years, and my sister, she comes over for lunch. She'll tell me, said, No, don't make that. Don't mix it like that, you know. I said, all right, sis. But I agree with her. And I said, yes, no problem. I think, yeah, well, I'll quite. Do whatever it takes.
But you really did. You trained in some amazing places, didn't you, Ainsley?
Yeah, I loved the... Well, I think the best training I had of all was in my mum's kitchen, believe it or not. And one of the reasons I say that is because that's where the love of food came from. That's where the sharing came from. You know, we talk about a lot of kids now who don't have that skill of cooking because the food either gets delivered or just gets put in front of them. We were really, really lucky, hence Dad being in showbiz and all that. Yeah. Have a fairly big kitchen. I mean, everyone has a nice kitchen these days, or a lot of people do have a nice kitchen. But, you know, we had a kitchen where we could hang out in, and therefore you could see how my mum was preparing things. Or when you'd open the fridge, there was a wonderful smell of marinated chicken or beef or whatever it was in there that was just full of colour and full of spice and everything. And it became something that just connected you in a way that you thought, oh, there's going to be something delicious coming along. And then you take it for granted. And it was so, so lovely to be able to have that. And therefore, when I got the opportunity to go and work in some, you know, professional environments, you could say, then it was all about learning how to cook for numbers. As far as the love of food was concerned, that was already in my locker. But the cooking for numbers and repeatedly doing the same thing, it's really, I remember Malcolm Cowan, who was my chef at the time, he said, I know it sounds boring to all of you boys, boring, but this is the standard I want. I want it like this every time. That might be boring to you, but that's what I want. So you kind of, you know, you have to, because you go back to your favourite restaurant, you want that carbonara that you've always wanted. You know, they do the perfect carbonara. That's what you want. So you kind of go there with that expectation. You don't want them to change it. And I know that there's certainly some restaurants out there now that have kitchens or prep kitchens away from the actual restaurant where everything is prepared and they bring it into the restaurant and the chefs just either heat up or garnish it up afterwards. Yeah. But that's okay. Why? Because every one of us cooks differently and they are obviously paranoid about nut allergies and stuff like that.
Of course, they might prefer
to say, this is the standard, this is how it will be, we'll deliver it, you don't have to do anything, you just get on with it, and that controls it much, much better. And more importantly, as I was saying at the beginning of this, the standard that is exactly the same every time.
Yeah.
You can't blame them. And
No, as long as it tastes nice. It's interesting that you mentioned carbonara, because I went to an Italian restaurant last night and my wife asked for carbonara. She said, can you not put cream in it, please?
Yeah.
And the chef said to her, of course, you obviously know Italian cooking. Only put cream in it because people expect it.
Yes. Isn't it wonderful that we've all moved on now, that we feel confident to ask for that,
isn't it,
to be able to engage with your knowledge.
Yeah, well, that's down to things like the things that you've been doing, as you say, for 35 years. I love the fact that also that you took both sides of your parents, that you took that dedication to food and that skill from your mother, but also the performer, the person who was able to communicate from your dad.
Absolutely. Yeah, he was a very, very good cook too. I remember later in life when Dad, after he had a terrible brain tumour thing and he had to retire from performing, but he took great pleasure in preparing food, you know. And he would say to me, because he lived in Manchester, when you're coming up from some Axtia Lambota bean. And I said, oh, soon, Dad. Well, let me know. He says, because I have to marinate. You know, it was all that.
Yeah.
And he'd go into a kind of a Jamaican thing because it would add a bit of joy to the whole experience. You know, it's kind of, if I say I come from some oxtails, not the same as huxtail. You know, it's just got a lovely feel to it.
It really has, isn't it?
Every morning, bless him. Every morning he'd have his cornmeal porridge, you know, which was lovely. And the night before he'd put in his cinnamon and his spices and everything else, nutmeg, grate some nutmeg into it and let it soak. So when he came down in the morning, he could just cook it very slowly on a very, very gentle heat. Mm-hmm. And the smell, so much satisfaction he got out of that.
Mm.
And bless him, you know.
Yeah, indeed. Well, we're going to put your mum's Dutchie pot into the time capsule as the first thing.
Mum's Dutchie pot going in there. What about
Lovely.
This little character here?
Okay, so what's number two? Who's that?
This is Pudder. This is Pudder. I've bitten off his nose. This is Pudder that's been with me for all my life, really.
So a little hedgehog.
A little hedgehog. But look at it's had it so long. Look at that.
It absolutely looks like a sort of a destitute hedgehog. Everything's falling apart.
Yeah, well, I've had it all my life, 67 really? Years now. Look at this. Yeah, this is my little hedgehog. This is like the equivalent of somebody's teddy bear. Mm-hmm. You can buy you well. Would you?
He's got a gorgeous face, hasn't he?
Oh, gorgeous.
Here we go again. My son loved hedgehogs, has had a little hedgehog since he was a tiny boy. There's something about their face, isn't there? There's something about that little sort of coming out of the spine.
A little snouty nose.
Yeah.
That little nose, yeah. And he was absolutely gorgeous. And because he's got an apron on representing a kind of a kitchen, you know, I think it's just kind of few holes in it, a few stains, like he's been just finished a Sunday service and it's been lots of roast beef. So wave at everybody. He's called Pudder.
Yeah,
I've had Pudder and I used to say to my mum, Pudder, and she'd go and give me Pudder, go and get Pudder with me, and I'd sleep with Pudder. Mm. So it's something that if I wanted to take in a capsule, it's also conjures up, it's a bit like the food analogy too, it conjures up that lovely feeling of comfort, takes you back. With it is attached an immense amount of history because, you know, you just remember my Auntie Guy, my Auntie Daphne. You know, I've got lots of aunts that used to come over and sort of tease me about my Pudder and get Pudder and sort of put into my face and stuff like that. Yeah. I've got some lovely, lovely memories. And I think when you're talking about a time capsule, when you're talking about having something with you, you're talking about something that's going to bring back wonderful memories. And I think that Pudder will definitely do that for me.
Yeah. Also, that lovely thing of the comfort that it gives you. Does it still give you that sense of relaxation and ease?
Well, I discovered girls, so I didn't need pudder for... And but he's still around, but he's, yeah. he sort of stays in the office now.
Right.
So I don't take him to bed, but, the office is where I come quite a lot. And so I come in here to do bits of work and stuff like that, even mm-hmm. though, you know, you can take your work with your iPads and stuff like that now, and your laptops, you can work anywhere, really, mm-hmm. can't you?
Yeah.
But I still like the comfort of having sort of books around me and a few pictures and a few things that, again, you can probably tell I'm a bit nostalgic. I like a bit of history around me, and I think that's really lovely.
Yeah.
So he stays down here now. Pudder stays up on the shelf, but he's, I love it. I love it. And I love the fact that when I brought up my children, I was able to tell them little stories about Pudder. And make up a few rather silly songs, you know. You know, have you ever seen a map? My daughter called Maddie go this way and that way. Have you ever seen a baddie go this way and that? And here come Pudder to play with my baddie. And, you know, with all that type
lovely.
Of silly, silly stuff that, that we love. And so I'm sort of passing it on. And now that my granddaughter has arrived, the only problem is that her mum is quite sort of, she's an interior designer. She's quite stylish. Mm. I don't know if she'd like this.
A Pudder is not, let's be frank, yes.
I think Pudder look, needs a haircut there. Look at that. He's got really worn out of the back there, isn't
it? It's gone almost bald.
Yeah.
That's a lovely sign, though, isn't it?
It's beautiful.
You see, that sentimental side of you, that interest in people's feelings, that comes across all the time. The fact that you were able to do all those programs with all those different people and create a relationship with them very quickly, which was the skill that you've always had, that ability to make people feel relaxed and at ease. Yeah. So if you think of the hundreds of programs that you've done where you had to take a member of the public and make them feel at ease in front of the camera, and you did that every time. It's an extraordinary skill.
I think it's, you know, the longer you're involved in this amazing business, you realize how important it is to be able to connect with people, make people feel comfortable. And you know who I met? I met Julie Goodyear up in Manchester, in one of my dad's clubs or someplace that I met. And she was still Bette Lynch at the time,
right?
In Corrie. And she'd obviously seen me do something on Ready, Steady, Cook or something like that.
Mm.
And she came up and said, listen, love, she says, if they don't push that button, she says, you're fuck all. She says, you're nothing in this world.
Yeah.
They push that button, they invite you into their home, you're one of them.
Mm.
Give them 10 seconds, doesn't matter where you are. And it always just resonated with me. It stuck with me. And I suppose the fact that, you know, there was a, the swear word was in there. This was years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
It meant that your ears perked up a little bit, but she was absolutely right. It's about just being able to give people a little bit of time. And when that, they reciprocate, the warmth that comes from them is amazing.
Yeah.
You know, hello, love, how are you? How a bit of a chat.
I saw you do it once. I walked through Berwick Street. Yeah. I was off to do a voiceover and you were filming in Berwick Street. And a great horde of people came up to you and started talking to you. Yeah. And you were clearly waiting to do a shot.
Yeah.
But you chatted to them. You chatted and said,
yeah.
Lovely to talk to you. We're just about to do a bit. And they went, oh, sorry, Ains. And off they went. But you didn't say, you can't. You gave them that moment.
Yeah. And it's, they go away through, well, I was on TV today with Ainsley. Love a bit of that. Love a bit of that. Are we moving on to what
else?
Yes,
move on to our next one, yes. So what's number three? Okay, ad break time. We'll be back before you can crack an egg.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com. One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Welcome back. Sorry for the mess. Apparently you did have time to crack several eggs. Apologies. Still, while I tidy up the kitchen, let's hear what else Ainsley Harriott would want in his time capsule.
Oh, golly. I don't know. I started to struggle, mm-hmm. and then I sort of started to say that maybe... Excuse my nose, everybody. Maybe we should bring Percy Pepper into it, because right. Percy Pepper, it's a pepper mill, as we know. Mm-hmm. But I still use him every day that I cook in my kitchen, or her. Percy Pepper's Percy Pepper. Susie Salt was a her, actually.
That's right,
and,
yes.
And all came about, for those people who don't know, I was doing, I think it was Can't Cook, Won't Cook, which mm-hmm. won Best Daytime Programme of the Year, the National Television Awards. Many moons ago, and it was such a joy. I remember talking to Sir Peter Bazalgette about it, and we had a very successful Ready, Steady, Cook program that ran and ran and ran, and mm-hmm. I think we nearly did 2,000 programs.
Amazing.
But we were looking for something to... I know it is phenomenal, mm-hmm. but we were looking for a program idea which was a bit game showy, but at the same time... You know, there's a bit of fun in there teaching novices how to cook, how to feel a bit more comfortable in the kitchen. And it was really, really lovely having lots of fun with people. And what happened was that we had this pepper mill. And I think I said to everybody out there, come on, we've got to find a name for our pepper mill. Which, when you open the door like that, you can imagine what it was like. Some of the replies were, one lady wrote and said, you should call it Lingford, like Lingford Christie. Right? I just can't imagine saying a bit of Lingford. So we had enormous laughs with that. And in the end, we decided, 1 minute, please, Mike.
Yes. And there is the pepper.
This is Percy Pepper.
Wow.
This is Percy Pepper. This has been with me. You can see it slightly sort of worn here a little bit.
Yeah.
A few grease marks on there, a few bits and pieces. I like the idea of that. It's almost like there's lots of love that's gone into that, and it's the use that's gone into it. Anyway, the reason that I've showed you that, because it became something that I had to then live with. There's also Susie Salt. And I'd say, oh, what goes on top of Percy Pepper? Susie Salt, the audience would shout. So it went, oh, I know it sounds a bit cheap and nasty, but it was extremely funny at the time. And what I discovered is that every time I went out now, you know, I opened the floodgates as far as, you know, a bit of the old blue conversation was concerned. Because I'd walk her around, I'd be in the supermarket or something. Oh, how's Percy Pepper today? You know, I'm getting all that type of stuff. So Percy Pepper, and I think what it is a lot of people now cook and they're home with a bit of Percy Pepper. So it's added a bit of cooking enjoyment to it. It's a bit of fun.
Yes.
Because I think if you're having fun, you're probably quite relaxed and you cook a lot freer. I used to often say that, you know, when I used to employ chefs, I wanted them to feel comfortable in the kitchen. You know, they moved comfortably in the kitchen. And that's what I looked for. I looked for a kind of, I didn't want a robot. I wanted someone who was quite free and relaxed and cooked with a certain finesse and stuff like that. That's what I felt that was required. You know, you put love into the food and it's reciprocated. You know, you kind of eat it and there's enjoyment.
Yeah, well, you've done that all the way through, that whole thing of putting garnish on stuff with a flourish.
Yes, yeah.
Do it with joy, with enthusiasm.
Yes.
And you're right, that will show in the food. It will taste in the food.
Yeah. And people love it. People just say, you know, oh, a little bit of Ainsley or something like that. If that's encouraging them, is that giving them something, then I think that's it's a wonderful pleasure. And I think I've kind of done my job.
Yeah, what a fantastic legacy, Haynes.
And it's gone on and on for so long now that it's kind of you're still doing it. You're still nourishing the nation.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean,
lovely.
People have come and gone, and you've absolutely not. You're still one of the nation's favourites. I think it's a wonderful thing.
It's quite incredible, that, isn't it? I was doing a radio thing the other day, and someone just said, was it 94 you started on Good Morning, Anna and Nick? And I went, what? You know, wow. It's just amazing, isn't it? Just bang, the time that's just flown by. And
I think I remember you even before that when you were acting.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, even in those days, I remember meeting you.
Loved it. And I think there was a yearnness, there was a hunger, there was a desire, Michael, to be put into a position, whether that be with my cooking or acting, whatever it was, or performing on stage. I used to do the Calypso Twins or Calypso Beat before that. Ironically enough, my friend's just been visiting from Australia for the Calypso Beat. He was over here seeing family, and we just reminisced and started talking about our songs, and he was Greek. And remember I told you about the Scudamores earlier on, and we have this fabulous song about walking down Northcote Road, where I live here, and the Barrow Boy song, "Before the sun we like to rise, down to the market for fresh supplies, get the stalls out on the street, fix the price, we got to compete, because come rain, sun or snow, we put on the Barrow Boy show. Ho, 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 ho. £2 of Tom's is my delight. Oh, yes. Look at those queues, so green and bright. Oh, aren't they lovely? Come on now, Mum, just have a look. Fresh as well, superb to cook. You can't beat the quality. How many pounds? One, two, or three?
Oh, brilliant.
And, oh, God, Michael, you get me going now. I haven't sang that song in 20 years.
There you are, you see. Yes, I remember that far back. It was always fantastic fun.
Sorry to go off like that, but it was a wonderful one.
It's a joy to hear it again. A joy.
And we used to say, oh, what was it? Bob Marley, and he would say, Nana Maskouri. Where's my moussaka? Where's my mango? Where's my moussaka? I like a lick of rum and me red sina. Bob Marley, Nana Maskouri. So all these different connections between Jamaican and Greek, and it was so, so wonderful. Just great. Sorry to go on about it.
Don't be sorry. It's lovely to hear.
Lovely moments.
Great. Right, well, let's put the peppermill in. Yeah. That goes in. That's number three.
Oh, right then. That's quite significant.
So what else have you got for me? What else have you got?
What else have I got for you? Well, I thought about this a lot, and I thought, what gives me the greatest pleasure? And I think sport has always done that for me. Mm-hmm. I'm a big Arsenal fan, and I have a shirt that's been signed by the Invincible team from many, many years ago. It's hung up there on the wall now.
Yeah, it's 20 years ago now, isn't it?
I know, And it's just given me the immense amount of satisfaction. And I've met some fascinating people along the way. People think that it's just a case of going along and watching your team play football. No, it's if you're a season ticket holder, you meet the most wonderful people. And you probably end up seeing them more than you end up seeing your family a lot of the time, you know?
Yeah.
But it's so true. It's because they're there every week and you go through all these mixed emotions together, shared mixed emotions. Mm. You know, you have those moments when you're hugging each other. You don't really do that very often. These people are strangers, but it's just about the relationship you have at the football club. Mm. And I think anytime you're talking about a time capsule, you're talking about something that's going to give you some wonderful memories, and that shirt certainly does. And the way it was signed and seeing them sign it, whether that would be a Patrick Vieira or a Thierry Henry or a Dennis Bergkamp or a Freddie Ljungberg, you know, I could go on and on. David Seaman, Lee Dixon.
A team.
Yeah, well, it not only was a team, it was the people around, the people involved in it. And I used to go off and have the occasional dinners with the players. I think, hold on a minute. Check that one out.
Oh, dinner with the, wow.
Yeah.
Look at you.
I know. It was wonderful. And it gives me so much pleasure. Patrick's there, Thierry's there, Dennis Bergkamp's there.
Oh, what a team they were.
Yeah.
Tonight, I heard somebody just yesterday, Ainsley, on the radio. Yeah. We're talking the day after Arsenal have lost for the first time in a long time and therefore have, in a way, seemed to have opened up the Premiership to Manchester City. It's not decided yet. It's a long way to go. But people were saying to him on Radio 5 Live, oh, you must be really sick. You must be so fed up. And he said, look, I've been supporting Arsenal all my life, he said. We haven't won the Premiership for 20 years. He said, this season has been one of the great seasons. We've played absolutely brilliantly. If we don't win it, we've still had a fantastic time, he said. And as a fan, I'm very proud of it. And I thought that was a really lovely way to look at it.
And I'm of the same cut of cloth of that person, because I brought up my children saying, this is our entertainment, this is our little get-together.
Yeah.
And it's a complete joy because, you know, my daughter who I goes with is 30, my son's 33. You know, at the end of the day, Michael, there's only four things to win. And what's interesting is that invariably the same teams win those four things. Mm-hmm. The same teams across Europe, across the world.
Yeah.
If you look at divisions and stuff like that, it's the same teams that seem to come to the fore.
Yeah.
And it's not over yet, but that's what you want. You just want to be, come March, as great Sir Alex used to say, you just want to be in the mix.
That's
come
right.
March.
That's
and
right.
That's what we are. We're in the mix. Okay, we're at the FA Cup. We're going to Bayern on Wednesday. How wonderful is that? 16 years since we've even thought about getting to the semi-final.
Yeah.
So that's brilliant in itself. And going there, and we are right behind them. I think it's magnificent what Arteta's achieved, what Edu's achieved, what everybody at Arsenal has achieved.
Yeah.
It's just great. I love it. I love going, and I realise everybody that is out there, whether you're a football fan or you're a cricket fan or sports in general, just gives so much satisfaction to each and every one of us. You know, it could be darts with that new young whiz kid, Littler.
Yeah.
I mean, can you imagine that? Inspired a whole new generation of young dart players thinking, oh, I want a bit of that, you know. And I just think, it's just great, great. And I think that's what it does for me. It's not just the football. What it does for communities and people, it brings people together. My friend who I sit next to, Carl, a year and a bit ago, he lost his wife. And, you know, he's in his 80s now. You get to that stage in life. And what satisfaction does he really have? That little journey, leaving up there, you know, in Surrey and coming down and going to the match, getting on the train, the build-up and everything, sitting next to us, going through his emotions. And every time he comes in, then, and we walk back to the car together and I drop him off at Euston so he can get his train down to Victoria, whatever. And those little moments, great, you know. Mm. I never had that with him otherwise.
No.
And we share, we talk about everything. Might talk about football, but we could talk about, you know, what's happening across the other side of the world or it literally anything. It's lovely. It really is very, very special. And I think that's why I'd like to put that shirt in a time capsule and take it with me, because it conjures up so much more than just a shirt with a few signatures on it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, yes, it's a very precious thing. What a lovely choice. Okay, so we've got one left. And really, this is supposed to be something you'd want to put in there and forget.
Yeah. I was thinking about this, and I have a very positive take on life. I'd like to think I have a very positive take.
I knew you'd find this difficult, because I know what you're like. I know how everything you take, you turn into a positive. So I thought you would struggle with this.
I just dropped my pen lid. Hold on. I know. Look at the pen. I need a... there you go. Put that on there. I thought about this for a while. I thought I could get political and I could go down the route of things like people who just don't have a nice time, people who don't want to smile, people who see a negative all the time, people who just not kind to one another, you know, with all the crap that's going on in the world. And I think to myself, that could so easily be something that I just like to put in a time capsule and throw, hopefully it ends up at the bottom of the ocean, but I don't want to pollute the ocean, but you know what I mean.
I do.
But the thing that got to me that really irritates me, and I think a lot more people will relate to this, is that when you open up a cupboard and those bloody, and you're looking for something, and the skis that you've had for years that you're never going to use again, you're too old, fall down on top of you. The tennis rackets, some of them were wooden, wooden tennis rackets, and you're looking for something. Why don't we throw them away? And they're all there, shoved, piled together. And not only that, the skis. Do you remember, I don't know if you've ever skied, Michael, but in the old days when we used to go skiing, I've been skiing since I was 12 years old and went to school. So it was a long, long time ago. We are talking about 70s probably, let me think, really early, 69, 70,
yeah.
Going skiing with the school. And as I became quite good over a period of time, in the old days, you used to buy skis that were much longer. They were much narrower.
Yeah.
And the ones are really long. So they were above your head. I'm 6 foot two, so I had really long skis to make you go fast. Well, we don't use those anymore, you know. Right. It's wider now, and it's probably down to about here, so you get much more control. But I kept those skis because I thought it would be really cool, you know, when you invite someone around. See, you've got skis. But I lived in an apartment, so every time you open this bloody cupboard, these skis were cascading down. And I just thought to myself, yeah, I think for all the people who've got sports equipment that they're never going to use again, but you just keep, that's what should just be dumped. Get rid of them.
And everybody has something like that in their cupboard. Yes. You're hanging on to the idea that, well, yes. I might play badminton again. You never know.
Yes, exactly.
It's
exactly.
Not going to happen.
And they've got it all there. My friend Michael has it, and he has tennis rackets, and the strings broken. You know, you can't.
Why?
And he's got these rackets that he used to have when the kids were growing up, you know, and I just think, wow, and we're all guilty of that. We've all got some bit of sport equipment we're never going to use again.
Yes,
now, it's like that jumper that you keep. You think, oh, that T-shirt, I'm going to paint in that one day. And you don't even want to do it anymore. You get someone in to do the painting.
At least it leads to that conversation. 45 years my wife and I have been together, and we every now and again have that conversation where we sit down to dinner and she says, you know what we need to do? And I say, what's that? She said, we need to go through all the cupboards in this house and throw away everything we don't need. And I go, you're absolutely right.
Yes.
And we never do it.
Never gets done.
No.
You've got to have something to do.
Yes.
You've got to have something to do. You know, it's kind of, who's that old American guy who used to, with the big round glass, he smoked the cigar?
Oh, yeah, Burns, George Burns.
That's it, George Burns. And he booked himself to perform at the London Palladium when he was 100. Mm. So he would have something to look forward to. You know, you've really got to have something to look forward to.
Brilliant. Brilliant. AZ, it's absolutely lovely to see you again and to see you looking so well and being so full of life. And as you've always been, it's a joy. Thank you for all the things you've done on our screens. And
thank you, Michael.
And I look forward to seeing many, many more years of it.
Yeah, well, I'll continue to do as much as I can. But you'll get to the stage where you just want to, you know, when your children are growing up, I've got my last one now, is about to finish uni, then you can suddenly start taking your foot off the gas a little bit. Do you know what I mean? You're not full on and look, thank God, I've got to keep this going. I don't want to stop completely.
No.
You know, I want to keep going. And I think the youth keep me going. And I got Jill Jack the other day.
Right.
That's when you're going down the road and suddenly students stop and they get out of the car. They do the pose like this with the imaginary frying pan and go, why, hello, Jill. And they get back in the car, they drive off. It was extraordinary. The bus driver, she looked at me and I looked at her. We winked at each other and just continued with our day because we all knew it's just a bit of fun.
How fantastic. What a thing to have in your life. And you deserve it. You deserve it. It's lovely to see you. Thank you very much, Ainsley.
Oh, thank you so much. Love to family, love to you, and get them bloody cupboards done. Thank you, Mike.
You have been listening to My Time Capsule with me, Mike Fenton-Stevens, and my guest, Ainsley Harriott. Many thanks for giving us your time. Do subscribe if you enjoyed yourself and do tell others it was worth listening to by rating it or even maybe writing a short review. If you have any guests you'd enjoy hearing on My Time Capsule, then let us know through social media, Twitter or X mostly in my case, but like a train that's coming sideways, we're on several platforms. Or you can email us at mytimecapsulepodcast@gmail.com.
You can get this podcast ad-free if you subscribe to Acast Plus, and you'll also get our weekly bonus podcast, My Time Capsule The Debrief, an in-depth discussion between me and my producer and son about very little at all. Still, some people enjoy it, and it's only £2.99 a month. Let's face it, there aren't many cheaper ways to waste your time. The theme tune, which can be found on Spotify, was written and performed by Pass the Peas Music. This was a cast-off production for Acast, and it was produced by the aforementioned John Fenton Stevens, my producer and son. And there you have it, another episode done and dusted. Obviously, the hoovering still needs doing, and there's a pile of washing that needs ironing. We haven't scrubbed the bath for a couple of weeks. And don't get me started on the garden. It's like a jungle out there. Still, as I always say, don't put off till tomorrow that which you could delay until next month. Bye.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Welcome to Sincerely Sloan, presented by Uninterrupted. I'm your host, professional tennis player, wife, parent, and entrepreneur, Sloan Stevens. As an athlete and as a person, my journey has had a lot of twists and turns, from moments of adversity and doubt to unimaginable triumph and satisfaction. Throughout the season, I'm joined by some of the biggest names in sports, entertainment, culture, and a few members of my tribe. Our conversations keep it real and push it past skin deep. We reveal the perspectives, routines, and products that allow each of us to show up at our best. Join me on my journey of self-discovery and many, many laughs along the way. Sincerely, Sloan.